might just get started so we can get into it and let other people come in as they arrive. Is that okay at the back? Tech people, thumbs up? Totally. Cool. Okay, so thank you all for coming to my session. I feel a little bit weird being up here, so I might get a little bit into the crowd as I get going, so be forewarned. I'm going to come off this tower. But my name is Anna Gunther. I'm the chief bubble blower and co-founder of PledgeMe, which is a crowdfunding platform. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about how we think crowdfunding is putting the fun back into funding for startups. So there's some new developments in New Zealand that I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about crowdfunding sort of globally. And then I'm going to end with a few tips and tricks of things that I've learned through my startup journey. And any of the rest of you in the room who've done startups, please feel free at that point to jump in with any of your own learnings, because I think that is always interesting to hear. And so we'll just get going. If you want to tweet while I go, you're totally more than welcome to. I might even try to respond if I'm quick enough. So this is PledgeMe. It's a platform that we built here in New Zealand just over 2 years ago. It actually came out of my master's thesis. I, for all of my sins, decided to go back and study again while I was working for the government, because I thought that'd be a great idea, studying and working full time and then starting a startup to boot. But I did my master's thesis on crowdfunding. And what we saw motivating people to give. And we focused really locally, and we focused a lot on startups. So in the past 2 years, we've raised almost $3 million now for over 650 campaigns, some of which were startups, so a lot of smaller companies getting their first initial seed capital coming through, as well as a lot of campaigns in sort of the musical and artistic and community spaces. And these are a bunch of the different ones, everything from a yoga education in prisons trust through to cartoonists and comic book writers and all of that. So I know you probably all know what crowdfunding is because you're a very technical crowd, but I thought I'd just quickly go through a little bit of the history about what it is. So crowdfunding really is as simple as it sounds. You go out to your crowd for funding. You set a deadline and a goal around it, and you try to raise a certain amount of money in that deadline. And if you meet that goal, you start giving out rewards to your pledgers. So it's a really young industry, not only in terms of how long it's been around, so the first crowdfunding platforms launched in 2008, 2009 overseas, but also the types of people that are using it. So these six kids are six of my favorite kids, but they're from Papakura, and they crowdfunded to get to the World Battleground Championship in Sydney. And not only did they manage to raise enough money to get over there, but they brought home silver. And it's not just young, it's growing. So you've probably seen some of the large campaigns overseas on Kickstarter. Here in New Zealand, we've had a few campaigns that have raised quite a bit of money. This one raised almost $1 million. So they crowdfunded to buy a Michael Perakofi sculpture for Christchurch. And that was after the quakes, you know, everything was quite horrible down there. And they had the sculpture come to the city. It was touring around the country. And they thought it really resonated with the rebuild feel in Christchurch at the time. And so they went out to their crowd and tried to raise enough money to buy it and bring it back. And not only did they raise money through us by crowdfunding, but they got it matched two different ways through Westpac and the local city council. And it's also graying. So my favorite campaigner to date is Stu Buchanan. He, at 82, decided to go and crowdfund for his first album of his own compositions. So he's a jazz musician, and he went out to his crowd, and he had three generations of people pledging to his campaign that he had taught music to. So it was amazing because he went out to his crowd, but he didn't really know what Facebook was or Twitter or any of those things, but he still managed to make his goal because of the crowd that he had around him. So we're really passionate about this idea that technology is enhancing community instead of replacing it. So it's just building on the connections that we already have in the real world and making it bigger and magnifying it. One great example of this is this crew down in Dunedin who wanted to build a wind turbine. And in order to build a wind turbine, it turns out you need to build a measurement tower first to see if, you know, the hill that you want to build your turbine on is any good. And so they went out to their crowd to crowdfund that, and they managed to raise enough money to build the tower as well as to build a fence around the tower. But not only did they raise the money from their crowd, but they actually managed to get their crowd to offer them rewards of things they could offer their pledgers. And they had crazy things like unicycle lessons and art and blues lessons, but they also had one woman who said that for $15, she'd home-killed chickens for them. They killed a lot of chickens. And so our mission statement with what we do is just to help Kiwis fund things they care about. And that ties really well into some of the changes that have been happening internationally in the equity crowdfunding space. So this is where startups really come in. So equity crowdfunding is the idea that you can go out to your crowd, and instead of just offering a reward like a t-shirt, you can actually offer shares in your company. And this is something that's quite exciting because it's really lowering the barrier for companies to go out and seek funding, because you don't have to create a costly public prospectus. You don't need to have all of the financial and audited information that you would normally require to go and list on the stock exchange. You also don't need to do crazy things like continuous disclosures. One example of this happening, so it's already happening in the UK quite successfully in Europe. One example, my favorite example actually, is BrewDogs. Does anyone here drink BrewDogs? Raising, nodding, yeah. So they're a brewery in Scotland, and they've done three rounds now of equity crowdfunding, which they've called Equity for Punks, which I think is the best name ever. But they started a really low sort of investment level. For $100, you could buy shares in their company. And with that, you get a loyalty card, so you get discounts on their beer. But in their last round that they did, in 2013, they raised £1 million in 24 hours for their company. And I think the most exciting thing is, you know, not only are you getting these rewards and the potential of a financial return, but you get invited every year to their AGM. And their AGM is actually a piss up in a brewery. So it's this large festival, they've got bands, you know, everything, and you just get to, and you get to bring a friend to their AGM. So that's one example of it working overseas. Another example that might be closer to home for some of you is Escape the City, which is a tech startup based in London. And what they were trying to do is create a platform where Londonites could find jobs outside of the city and actually escape the city. And they were approached by venture capitalists and angels who wanted to help them grow. But they decided they wanted to try this equity crowdfunding thing because they had a large user base. So they had 18,000 users. In a week, they raised £500,000. And they actually then went on to do a second round within a few weeks as well. And so that funded their second iteration of their website. So in the States, they're getting on board as well. So they've brought through Titles 1 and 2 to allow equity crowdfunding. But it's really still only in the sophisticated market. So it's only people that can say that they have enough wealth to invest in companies and they understand the risks very well of startups. And it's probably about time there, though, that they get into equity crowdfunding. So I'm not sure if any of you saw the backlash after Oculus Rift sold. Did anyone catch that in the news? So basically, Oculus Rift, they went on to Kickstarter, and they crowdfunded to create their product. And they raised, I believe it was around $1 million to do that. And they did really well, and people were really excited because they loved the idea and they wanted to be a part of it. But when they went and then sold to Facebook, a lot of the people that pledged $50 were pretty sad because they were like, hey, I pledged $50, and if this had been an investment, I would have gotten a $40,000 return from that. So in the States now, it's actually what we're seeing is a lot of companies are seeing that doing product development and things like that would make more sense potentially through equity crowdfunding because of the connection to your crowd and the expectations from them. So in New Zealand, we are one of the first countries that actually changed our legislation specifically for equity crowdfunding. So the new legislation came into effect on the 1st of April. It's a bit of an interesting thing because our Financial Markets Authority is actually licensing each of the platforms that wants to provide this service. I used to work in government, so I thought I totally understood what bureaucracy was. Turns out I didn't, because going through the licensing process was pretty intense. But we're one of the first platforms that have been licensed to provide this service in New Zealand. And we think it's really important. I'm not sure if any of you have startups. Does anyone in the room have a startup at the moment that they're working on? Has anyone tried to seek funding at all? I see a few hands, half a hand, a hand at the front. It's really hard, isn't it, going out and seeking funding? The numbers are pretty insane. You know, you look, $57 million is invested every year by VCs. I think half of that went to Vend last year, so really it's only $25 million. That's matched by angels, so it's around $50 million again as well is invested. But $33 billion is lent by the banks, which shows that there is this huge need for funding, And the money that's being lent by the banks isn't being lent to startups. So there's a huge space where no money is going. What we do know is that up to 5 times the amount of money that's invested is actually invested by family and friends as well. So 5 times the 57 million we know is being invested by family and friends. And that's my family, actually. That's really interesting, though, because you think about it, you're going out to your family and friends, and they're unsophisticated investors, and they probably don't really know how to do it well. They don't know the right questions to ask. So it can be really unclear what they're getting into. You probably forget to sign some of the documents. And there's a lot of baggage that comes with doing those family and friends rounds individually, because there's no clear path of how you should be doing it. One of the things that keeps on coming up around equity crowdfunding is people keep on asking, I shouldn't have put that many words on the slide, I'm sorry, but people keep on asking, you know, why would you do that? It must be this space where there's so much room for fraud. I mean, because it's online. Crazy things happen online. And that's really interesting, because we get that a lot from the people that are already in the space, a lot of the angels and the VCs and the people existing in the financial markets, because they think that, you know, as soon as you go online, fraudulent activities occur and everyone's going to lose their money. But what we've seen, both from the project crowdfunding side of things, but also equity crowdfunding so far, is that that's not the case, because it's so transparent. People can see and ask questions real time. They get to talk to the companies and find out more information as they go. And also, there's these constellations of trust around it, which is something that the World Bank report last year brought up, and they're saying that with crowdfunding, there are people that are legitimizing what you do and validating it because they know you or they know the company. So really, the likelihood of fraud and failure is a lot lower because they're validating it as you go. And also, you know, you really wouldn't want to do something to your mom and then have a very awkward Christmas dinner where you've stolen all her money and gone to the Bahamas, because that just wouldn't really go down well. So that thinking and the space currently around it being this sort of scary new thing that isn't going to work, really, we don't think is the case. Neither does the World Bank. Personally, we know the pains of seeking investment, so we did a round ourselves as a startup earlier this year. And it was really interesting, because it was this thing where you go out to the angels and you talk to them, and they don't really get what you're doing. But as soon as you start talking to your advisors and people that you know, they really get it, and they want to get on board. And we managed to do a round quite quickly, actually. It only took 2 to 3 weeks to close it once we started. But we personally were really sad that we couldn't do this equity crowdfunding thing for ourselves because we weren't licensed and it wasn't yet legal in New Zealand. But because also it meant we couldn't tap into our crowd of users and tap into our customers and turn them into brand ambassadors who felt like they owned what we do. So here's just some information about it. Again, too many words on the slide. But the New Zealand landscape is that there's a 2 million cap on how much companies can raise per annum. And that means that you can raise up to 2 million from unsophisticated investors, but you could also go out to wholesale investors around that as well. It lowers the cost. As I said earlier, you're not creating this public prospectus, which costs a lot of money and is really hard to do, and only a few people can actually do it. It widens out the investor pool because, you know, you can go beyond your immediate networks, and you can go beyond the sophisticated investors. One of the rules that, or the test that has to go on every campaign that comes through is it can't be false or misleading. So really that just means that you have to clearly explain the assumptions of how you got to your numbers and be really transparent about all the information you're using. And it has to go through a licensed platform. So people can't just start equity crowdfunding themselves anywhere on the internet. It has to go through someone that's licensed to bring that company through. One of the things that we think is going to be the most important part about this is good education, which is sort of why I got excited when I got asked to talk to you all, is just talking about how it works and how it works well. So I'm going to run quickly through what the 4 steps are to equity crowdfunding, and then I'm going to end with just some of my tips from startup world of things that I've learned along the way. So the first thing that you have to do when you do an equity crowdfunding campaign is you have to think about the plan. You have to know what you're going to do. You have to be a New Zealand registered company, so you do have to be a company. You can't start crowdfunding before you have all the legal things ticked off of being in the company's register and all of that, the company's office. That's super easy to do. Has anyone ever registered a company here? It takes about 10 minutes online, very quick. Got your credit card. So yeah, the first thing that you have to do is make sure that you're a registered company. You have to know what the funding's for. So you have to say how this is going to grow your business or start your business, because people aren't going to invest if they don't see the potential of that company growing and them getting a return later down. the path. So you have to be clear about how you're going to spend the money that you receive. And when you're doing all of those financial forecastings and things, you need to show the money that you receive through equity crowdfunding coming in as well. And then it's the documentation. So, you know, it's as I said a few times, it's a lot simpler than doing creating a public prospectus, but you still need some information around both your financials, so what you currently have and what you're forecasting, and also a business plan, which outlines all of the normal things. You also have to know who your team is and talk about what their roles are and who they are. This is a team that we had come through the project space, but I just really love sharing their story because they are such beautiful people. But they wanted to crowdfund to create a book of photography. So they wanted to go around the country taking pictures of kids with genetic conditions. And they wanted to call it the Superpower Baby Project because their daughter, Evie, had actually passed away from a genetic condition a few years ago. And they wanted to change the language around disabilities in New Zealand into superpowers. And so they very clearly in their campaign showed who they were the entire time. They talked about team, they talked about themselves. They also had very distinct roles in what they did for the campaign. But that made the campaign so much more personal and made it something that people could really connect to because people pledge to people. So you need to be sure when you're setting up a campaign that you're not just showing a shiny product or a shiny company, you're showing the people behind it as well. And they managed to raise $85,000 in 30 days to undertake their campaign, and their book just came out last week. You also have to keep it balanced. This isn't one of our campaign creators, but you need to be really clear when you do a campaign that it's something you can do. So you need to show your track record, you need to show your experience, you need to talk about what you've done in the past, and really show that you can do what you say you want to do. Like, it can be really aspirational, but keeping it balanced is really important. The second thing you have to do is you have to pitch your campaign. So this is what not to do with text. I know a lot of us in the room like to write really long and detailed information around what we're doing. I am totally one of those people. But when you're doing a crowdfunding campaign, it needs to be clear and concise. A few paragraphs tops. You don't want to overload people with information on the front page straight away, especially detailed jargon. So you need to keep it real. You also need images to break up the text. So it could be pictures of your team, it could be pictures of your product, it could be pictures of anything really, but just anything that shows what your campaign is about and who you are to break it up. We also say video is king. You're 117% more likely to be funded if you have a pitch video on your campaign. And so we really recommend creating a video. I'm not gonna show right now, but I often show a video of these guys when they were creating their pitch video because they created a video that was really bad and then a week later created a video that was really good. And the bad video, they were doing okay, but as soon as they put their new video live, they were funded within 24 hours. So it shows the importance of having a video that shows who you are and talks about what you do. You also have to make it interesting. This isn't a grant application. You're also not applying to an angel group. So you need to show your personality in the project. And you can wear panda onesies if you'd like. That's what some of our campaign creators have done so far. Not required. But you definitely need to make sure people see personality in what you're doing. And then the promo side, what we say is make a list of 50 people. So who are 50 people in your personal, professional networks that you think would pledge to your campaign, who you think would invest? And then get in touch with them. Probably get in touch with them before you even go live to check and see if they are interested in something like that, to see if they'd want to get on board with you. When we do campaigns, we do it sitting around the office table with beers. So it turns into a little bit of a party. But you want to do that market validation. You want to check in with your crowd. You want to see if they are interested. So we say the golden rule is have a list of 50 people each that you're going to get in touch with to talk to. With the promotion, you also want to think about social media. You're all probably well across that already, but you need to have imagery and content that you're going to send out to through your social media networks. And the crazier, again, the better. But just get people talking about what you're doing. This is one of our favorite images that we've had come through on social media around a campaign. Jordan, who you can see jumping into the water on the left, was one of our campaign creators. And he said that for every $10 pledged to his campaign, he would jump into a freezing body of water in the South Island, shouting out your name to camera. He had to jump 42 times, and that's one of the 42 times. We thought he was going to get pneumonia. But having good content to share through social media is important. You also want to make it a journey. So you don't just want to go out with the ask for funding or the ask for investment. You want to take people along for a ride. And you can take them along for a ride in a lot of different ways. The way this woman, Liz, did it was every day she put up a new picture of an outfit she was going to wear to the cabaret show that she was crowdfunding to go and perform at. And so every day she put up a new picture as well as the link to her campaign. But she not only crowdfunded to get over to the UK, but crowdsourced the choice of what she should wear. So you can think really differently around how you bring people in. But I think, you know, taking people along for the journey acknowledges that what you're doing is very interesting. And being in startup world, as a lot of you know, is very interesting. There's lots of ups and downs. And sharing that journey really gets people excited because they don't often get to see what you go through every day. So making sure it's a journey is really important. You also think about traditional media. I think we all get a little bit down on traditional media and think they're only talking about bad things that are happening in the world, but often they like good stories, especially when there's a good angle to it. Not just crowdfunding, not just funding, but they do like talking about successes. So pitching to local media especially, it normally works really well. And then you have content that you can share through social media as well to tell your crowd about what you've been up to. We also recommend talking in real life. So it's not just online, guys. You want to do events and go out there and talk about what you're doing and talk about your funding with real people, either by organizing events yourselves or going along to other events and reminding people that you're doing something really cool and they can help you out. The last part is post. So what happens after you've raised all this money and you're a really well-funded startup and you can do everything that you wanted to do? Well, you need to communicate. These people that have invested want to know what you're up to, and they want to know everything. So making sure that there's a way to communicate with them is going to be really important, be it through email, be it through social media. You want to have that communication flow with them. And not in an overwhelming way, but in a way that they can help you as well. So, you know, you're saying, hey, 100 investors, we're thinking about entering the Australian market. Who here knows someone in Australia that we should be talking to about our product? In fact, can you introduce us? So keeping that communication open isn't just for the legal information that you're required to provide, but it's also building that community and crowd around what you're doing as well. You also need to be really good with your financials. If you raise money, you will need to think about going through the audit process if unless 95% of your investors vote and say you don't have to. So thinking about things like audit, thinking about things like financials is really important as well, and making sure that you have someone in your team who's on top of that. And you also need to think about the takeovers code in New Zealand. So if you're a company looking to raise funding, you need to be aware that once you have more than 50 shareholders, you become a code-compliant company in New Zealand, which isn't as scary as it sounds. It's actually quite a good thing because it just means that if you get into a takeover situation, you need to have a report created so your shareholders don't feel like they're being screwed over. And going into a takeover situation only happens in certain instances, but it's still something that companies need to be aware about if they are thinking about doing this type of funding. And so these are my tips now. I'm just going to talk about some of the things that I've learned as I've been going. One of the biggest things is sometimes you just have to jump. So that's actually me jumping. I got punked at our $1 million party last year and forced to crowd surf wearing a dress. Not something I'd recommend. But sometimes you do have to jump. And I think that's the scariest thing for startups is you're building something and you're doing something new and you don't really know how it's going to go down. So you keep on building because you want to make it perfect. And you never really want to jump because you're too scared. And I think the biggest thing that I've learned is you have to jump, and you have to jump often. You need to test things out as you go and get feedback. So you can't wait until the code is golden. I've also learned that good entrepreneurs are resilient, not serial. I'm not sure if it's the same in Auckland, but in Wellington we have this thing at the moment where everyone thinks we should be creating lots and lots of startups, and just everyone should be creating all these different startups as you go. And well, I think that has its place. I think that actually for us, entrepreneurship is something where you have to be really resilient because there are the ups and the downs and you need to be able to get through that. And good entrepreneurs turn really shitty situations into really good opportunities. So bearing that in mind as a startup, I just really love this picture. But I heard this quote last year and I think it also resonates really well with startups in that, you know, your best work really does happen at the edge of your comfort zone. You know, you have to be a little bit scared about what you're doing to do your best work. So you have to push pretty hard and do things that you normally wouldn't do to make something great happen. I'm about to show you a video. Does anyone, Derek Sivers, anyone a fan? Fan of Derek? I'm going to show you his video just after this, but the quote from that video that struck me the most was, your first follower or customer is what turns a lone nut into a leader. So really what you're doing, creating these startups, almost isn't the most important thing. The most important thing is that first person that buys your product and validates what you do and says that what you're doing is great. So.
So ladies and gentlemen, at TED we talk a lot about leadership and how to make a movement. So let's watch a movement happen, start to finish, in under 3 minutes and dissect some lessons from it. First, of course you know, a leader needs the guts to stand out and be ridiculed. But what he's doing is so easy to follow. So here's his first follower with a crucial role. He's going to show everyone else how to follow. Now notice that the leader embraces him as an equal. So now it's not about the leader anymore, it's about them, plural. Now there he is calling to his friends. Now if you notice that the first follower is actually an underestimated form of leadership in itself. It takes guts to stand out like that. The first follower is what transforms a lone nut into a leader. And here comes a second follower. Now it's not a lone nut, it's not two nuts. Three is a crowd, and the crowd is news. So a movement must be public. It's important to show not just the leader, but the followers, because you find that new followers emulate the followers, not the leader. Now here come two more people, and immediately after, three more people. Now we've got momentum. This is the tipping point. Now we've got a movement. So notice that as more people join in, it's less risky. So those that were sitting on the fence before now have no reason not to. They won't stand out. They won't be ridiculed. But they will be part of the in crowd if they hurry. So, over the next minute, you'll see all of the those that prefer to stick with the crowd, because eventually they would be ridiculed for not joining in. And that's how you make a movement. But let's recap some lessons from this. So, first, if you are the type, like the shirtless dancing guy, that is standing alone, remember the importance of nurturing your first few followers as equals. So it's clearly about the movement, not you. Okay, but we might have missed the real lesson here. The biggest lesson, if you noticed, did you catch it? Is that leadership is over-glorified. That yes, it was the shirtless guy was first, and he'll get all the credit, but it was really the first follower that transformed the lone nut into a leader. So as we're told that we should all be leaders, that would be really ineffective. If you really care about starting a movement, have the courage to follow and show others how to follow. And when you find a lone nut doing something great, have the guts to be the first one to stand up and join in. And what a perfect place to do that, TED. Thanks.
Derek is really interesting. He actually just moved to New Zealand last year. He started CD Baby in the States, which was the first platform for distributing independent music. Sold it, moved overseas, and now he's in New Zealand. And he's really great because he actually catches up with a lot of us startups in Wellington to talk about what we're doing and give us his advice. But I didn't actually know when I first met him that he was the same Derek that I show the video of every time I talk. So that was a bit of an embarrassing moment when I realized that he was the same person. Another thing that I've learned along the way is that good decisions come from a diversity of conversations. That is not diverse. I'm not sure if anyone else loves Tumblr as much as I do, but 100% men is the best Tumblr ever. This is the board from the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And basically, 100% men just goes around finding all of the last bastions of only men-focused organizations. But what I've learned along the way, and this has been a really interesting thing for me, being a woman in the tech industry, even though I'm not that technical, but being a woman in the tech industry is that we do ourselves have to go out and seek that diversity, because often I surround myself with women. So having good diversity is really important, and getting a lot of different people around the table that actually reflects your crowd of customers is important. Also, you never want to be the smartest person in the room because then you have nothing to learn. I've found that as well. Like, you want to constantly be learning from other people around you and finding people that can give you advice and maybe not mentorship, because I think we should all be giving something back as well, but just understanding that you don't have to know everything, and it's actually good when you don't, because then you have something more that you can learn. You can ask your crowd for help. So this is, again, that crew down in Dunedin, but I think as a startup, we often feel like we, as I said before, have to know everything and be doing everything, but actually, there's so many people that want to help out, especially when you're a startup, because you're fun and new and shiny, and a lot of people get a bit of a buzz out of helping what you doing what you do. So being really clear that you can ask for help is something that I've learned. I've also learned that you should show, not tell. So instead of talking, I show a lot of photos. But especially with startups and what we do, we need to really show what we're doing instead of just talking about it all the time. Just two more, but I'm going a lot quicker than I thought. You have to be open to change. So in startup world, as I said, things change all the time. And you need to be able to roll with that and be resilient. But one example of this that came through from one of our crowdfunders that I thought was really cool was she was crowdfunding to create a documentary called Road to Ruin, which was about the most tattooed woman in New Zealand. And she was crowdfunding to get the cost to hire a voiceover artist for the short film that she was making, the documentary. And her crowd came back and said, hey, you know, we love what you're doing, great, great idea, great documentary, but you did such a good job with your pitch video doing the voiceover work, we don't think you should spend your money on that. And so she actually took that feedback on board and in the end made her pitch video twice the length because she could put it through more post-production and did the voiceover work herself. So I think as startups as well, we need to be open to change and changing what we're doing along the way. And this is my last bit of advice, but never get a haircut before a photo shoot. Just the worst idea in the world. So that's me. I'd really like to open up and see if there's any questions or comments or thoughts on what I talked about around funding and startup world. No pressure. If you have no comments, we can go to lunch early. Yep. So you're thinking sort of like a demo day?
Yeah, like pitch party.
Yeah, so we have done a few of those in the past, but we don't have any plan at the moment. But it is something where we think companies should be doing that themselves as well. So getting a bit of a party together around what they're doing, getting their crowd around. I mean, there are a lot of people watching what's happening, but it sort of has to be validated first from your personal networks and crowd. Mm. Do you work for government?
No.
I was working for the New Zealand government, New Zealand Trade and Enterprise, did a lot of work overseas, and then came back and realized that if I wanted to progress, I'd probably have to either study or go and work for a private company. And so I did both, study and started my own private company. But government's great, it's just a different viewpoint. I actually think it broke me a little bit though, because now I don't just think about our company individually, I actually try to make friends with everyone and look at how we can collaborate, which is more of, I think, a government focus than a purely commercial. Hey.
Are you aware of how many companies in New Zealand have done an equity crowdfunding?
Well, so it's just become legal recently, and the first licenses were granted a month ago. So one company has successfully crowdfunded so far, but the pipeline is huge. Just turns out companies are very slow. one of the things that we're finding, especially, is the financial side of things. Companies are struggling a bit getting that ready, even with the lower expectations. Any other questions, or are we good? What was that, sorry? Yeah, so it's a success fee. It's similar to the models overseas of 5%, which is actually less than the success fees for angel groups and things like that, which is around 6% as well as an equity stake. from the company side. You're all staring at me. Yeah.
Does Pledge.me offer any sort of assistance in promoting campaigns, or is it about the campaigner using their core network?
It's a bit of both. We do definitely support campaigns and promote it through our networks, but it is still has to be validated first through the company and their crowd. There was a hand up over there as well, another one. No. Yeah, so there aren't many costs to get up and going. Video work, it really depends on your videographer, but we've got a few that do pretty basic ones for like $1,000. And then it's $150 to put a request through us. Yeah, and register the company if it's not already registered. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Cool. It depends on how much you want to raise. So if you're doing a small sort of seed capital round through your family and friends, it could be quite early on. But if you want to do something bigger, then you'd want to wait until you had some customers using it and excited about what you're doing. So it really just depends on how much money you need and when. Cool. Any other raised hands? Shall we just go to lunch a little bit early? Yeah? Okay, cool.